And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. It's just absolutely stunning outside. You may not know this, but the geography on the way from the house to here is on Highway 69. And there's a pretty famous location here in Jacksonville. It's called Love's Lookout. You can see just about as far as you want to see. If you say, I'd like to see 25 miles, well, you could do it there. Is it a mountain? Not exactly. Is it higher than anywhere else? Probably. Since we don't have real mountains here in East Texas. This program is Health Essentials. I am your host, Dr. Roy Morgan. I'm going to try to convince you, one way or the other, that you need to be your own advocate. It's really up to you. This is the body that you've been given by God Himself. It's a gift. And it's up to you to decide what you're going to do to take care of it. Do you just give in to every simple desire, whether that be junk food, or do you discipline yourself to avoid the very thing that could destroy you? I hope to give you information this morning that helps you make good decisions, but the beautiful thing of this is there's so many good things that actually have such a nutritional healing quality to them and that you can get pleasure from. I want to read this to you. What I want you to do is I want you to guess who wrote this. This was written by a young lady in the year 1903. Tell me if you can figure it out. It's called Memories of Muscadines. In places, the wild muscadine vines stretched from tree to tree, making arbors which were always full of butterflies and buzzing insects. It was delightful to lose ourselves in the green hollows of that tangled wood in the late afternoon, and to smell the cool, delicious odors that came up from the earth at the close of the day. That was written by Helen Keller in 1903. I was reading this morning about muscadine grapes. If you go out and you walk where there's trees and woods, I bet you anything you're going to see muscadines growing. And of course the grapes are teeny, tiny, small. But when you see them hanging from the trees, you think, hey, there is potential. Now I know where to come back and pay a visit when it's time to harvest some grapes. So God has designed in the grapes some of the most amazing properties of all time. I was reading the other day in the book of John, and when Jesus was on the cross and he said, I thirst, there was a hyssop stalk, and they affixed a sponge to the top of the hyssop stalk. And then they put wine vinegar on it, or poured wine vinegar on the sponge, and as they held it to his lips, that was when he said, it is finished, and he breathed his last. Well, you can go into the grocery store anytime you want. You can purchase organic wine vinegar. It's called balsamic vinegar of Modena, and it shows grapes on the outside. So some people are in love with apple cider vinegar. I like it too. But you can also get vinegar from grapes or from wine. And I think there's only two ingredients. Personally, my plan, this is just the way I like it, is I will make a cup of herbal tea. I have a routine of loving to squeeze the juice of one lemon into that cup of tea. And then maybe a splash or two. I don't really know exactly what the unit of measurement is. It's probably more than a teaspoon. It's probably more like a good tablespoon or so. Yeah, I'll say a tablespoon. That's probably closer to the truth. But I'll put a splash of a tablespoon of the organic wine vinegar. But I like it. So maybe it has some health properties to it. You've got to eat food, so you might as well eat something that actually has a nutritional quality to it. Now, I want to read this to you right here. I tried to look up a little bit of research, and I thought this would be kind of a light, easy, simple program that everybody could buy into. Back in the year 2012, there was a very unique dietary study. It was done by British researchers, or should I say English researchers from Great Britain, probably from Wales. They enrolled 21 adults, which is probably not hard to find, 21 adults that were showing early signs of memory loss. As a matter of fact, they probably chose these adults from their own family members. I don't know. But you can tell when someone is not as sharp as they used to be. And so, there may be a message in here. And in this particular study, they said, okay, these 21 adults, their minds are not as sharp as they used to be. They don't seem to recall or have a great memory. What are we going to do? So they came up with a brilliant plan. Here it is right here. Each day for 4 months, half of the participants drank 2 cups of Concord grape juice. That's it. I bet you that was hard to get them to participate. Not. So each day for 4 months, half the participants drank 2 cups of Concord grape juice, and the other half consumed an equal amount of a non-nutritious drink. I have no idea what that is. Maybe it was grape Kool-Aid. Maybe it was grape-colored soda water. I don't know. I just know this. It was not Concord grape juice. It came from a grape. The participants were given brain scans at the beginning and the end of the study to measure the activity in the regions of the brain that are devoted to learning and memory. The people who had been drinking the grape juice showed a marked increase in activity in those regions of the brain that demonstrate memory and learning. The other participants, no change. Like, that takes a genius to figure that one out. There was another study. This one's published in the American Journal of Cardiology. You may not know what cardiology is, but if you require the services of a cardiologist, you can bet your bottom dollar there's something gone awry with your heart. Which, technically, heart disease is the number one cause of death. I don't want anyone to die of a heart attack. And in this study from the American Journal of Cardiology, they determined that Concord grape juice could actually make people's arteries more flexible and lower their blood pressure. Well, how long do you want to discuss that topic before you consider it in a significant fashion? Well, it doesn't take long. I mean, sure, there's always going to be a couple people, even if you tell them what the solution is, they will have nothing to do with it. They're going to go their own way, and that's their choice. That's what God's given us. He's given us a free will. You have the final say on how you're going to take care of yourself. But I can tell you this. From my short time here on earth, you're only going to live as long as your arteries and your veins remain supple and pliable and youthful and flexible and bendable. You can say any way that you want. I guess the opposite of all that would be our arteries that become hardened because they're filled with rock-solid cement called calcium. Do you want to have calcified arteries? Well, I know the answer. That's a rhetorical question. It's no, you don't. But if you want to age quickly, the more rigid and stiff your arteries are, you're asking for trouble. It could be everything from, you know, basically, when your arteries are stiff, what that really means is you have way too much inflammation in your body. It's been said before that the most precise, correct definition of inflammation is it's a repair deficit. I like that definition, repair deficit. Well, when I think about that, I think, okay, something here is in need of repair, but for whatever reason, the body's just not able to heal it, or fix it, or mend it, or repair it. It's as simple as that. And so I remember Dr. Robert Fivecoat. I know he's got to be long since gone. He was 93 when I was in the clinic back in the late 80s. There's no way Dr. Fiveco could still be alive, but I sure did like him. He was very tall. He was 5'3". He had very thick Coke bottle-like glasses. His hair was very, very white, but he had a very full head of hair. I think he was kind of barrel-chested, like a very short, stocky Italian man. But I liked him. You know, the funny thing of it was, when I first started visiting the clinic as an intern, all the other upper-tier students, they had an opinion about who would be the best clinic supervisor for you. Because, you know, as a student intern, you've got to be assigned a clinic supervisor. And I would listen to the upper trimester geniuses of the school say that you did not want Dr. Fiveco because he wasn't sophisticated enough. And you know what? The truth is, and I'm ashamed to say this, I probably started to buy into that, but that just kind of goes to show you, sometimes you hear something about a person and it's told to you in such a way that is very biased and very prejudiced, that just because a person tells you that does not make it true. And you know how human beings can be. They can try to tell a story in such a way to kind of twist and bend the truth to make themselves look good and make another person look bad. Well, that happens every day. You don't have to look far. You know what I'm talking about. But I think when they talked about Robert Fiveco, they kind of cast him in a light that maybe he was an old fuddy-duddy or he wasn't sophisticated enough. But I can tell you one thing that he taught me. He taught me several things. I remember one time I had this little girl that I was taking care of. Her mother and the little girl were in a room, and she had a problem. And for whatever reason, I cannot remember for the life of me exactly what she was dealing with. But this was a teaching hospital. And so I was stuck. And I said to myself, Roy, go get Dr. Fiveco and ask him for help. And before I even got him to the room, I gave him kind of a debriefing on what I felt like the problem was. And he turned to me and we were just walking down the hallway back toward the patient examination room. And Dr. Fiveco said, Roy, there has got to be something very simple that we can do to help this little girl. And the guy was like magic. He went in there, he showed me what to do, and I thought to myself, oh my goodness, I could learn something from this guy. So I quickly learned to put all the prejudice bias aside that I had heard from the upperclassmen about him, and I said, man, this is a guy I could learn something from. The other thing that Dr. Fiveco taught me, and I know this was over 30 years ago, but still I think it rings true today, or at least I think of it frequently. I think I told one person this week, you know, just in a nutshell, I didn't give him the credit for it, I should have, but he would say to me, he'd say, Roy, he said, if tissues or cells in your body break down at a faster rate, then the ability of your body to either repair those damages or replace the damaged cells with new, strong, vibrant, healthy cells, if your body can't do that, then you're going to have physical symptoms. So let's insert you into the equation right now. If you have any symptoms that you do not care for, that could be continual migraine headaches. That could be your digestive tract. You're constantly burping and belching. You're passing gas. You're constipated. You have diarrhea. You could tell me that's not my problem. My problem is I have low energy. If I said, really? Well, tell me what that is. If 10 is wonderful, perfect energy, and 0 is total exhaustion, and you say it's a 1, I'm thinking, okay, we got an issue here. So Dr. Fiveco was right. You're not going to have any physical symptoms of any kind just as long as your body can make repairs to cells that become damaged. And this happens millions of times a second. I actually might not be doing justice to the idea of million times a second. It might be billions or trillions times a second. We take hits or damage from free radicals. Everything from pollution to pesticides to chemicals that are man-made, and believe me, there's tons of chemicals that are man-made and processed that we did not experience 100 years ago on the planet. Kind of like when I read to you about Helen Keller's quote. I don't think I've had one person tell me they liked the odor that would come up from the earth at the cool of the evening, but I like that very much. I kind of like the smell of dirt. So if your arteries are hard, guess what's going to happen? Your blood pressure is going to go up. And that's what I'm suggesting to you, is you're only going to do as well and live as long as your arteries can remain supple and pliable and flexible. So when I read you that study from the American Journal of Cardiology, they determined that simple Concord grape juice could make people's arteries more flexible and lower their blood pressure. I'm thinking, I like that very much. Here's another small piece of research. One research study shows that grape juice can thin the blood, reducing the risk of blood clots that can trigger a heart attack or a stroke. I don't know, has anybody heard of COVID-19 or the coronavirus? Well, that is one of the aspects of dying with it, is you have all these clots all over the body. There's this initial domino effect where chemical changes happen within your lungs and your blood, and that's very precise, but they're finding out now that some of these people, if they're going to save them, they've got to give them blood thinners because clots will form. Well, isn't this interesting that grape juice has been shown to thin the blood? By the way, no one drinks grape juice and then shows up to church on Sunday morning and they have purple blotches under their skin because it made their blood too thin. I haven't seen that in over 32 years. But I sure have seen a lot of that when someone's taking a blood thinner. Or what I should suggest is, they're taking way more of the blood thinner than what they need. I don't know, is that a precise science? Is this like super scientific, prescribing a blood thinning agent and then having the ability to figure out how thin or how thick it is? I know there's a lot of factors, and they can do things like INF and prothrombin time, things like that. They can measure how thick or thin. But in the real world, you don't want your blood vessels breaking apart and leaking nonstop. Anyway, if you'd like to call and ask me a question, the phone line is officially open at 903-586-5257. Of course, if nobody wants to call, I'm going to unload some other good information on you. Now, this I find very interesting also. I was walking through the parking lot the other day of a very large store that has a portion of its parking lot devoted to plum trees and pecan trees. They've got lemons. They have all sorts of flower-bearing shrubs and flowers for sale. I don't really think the flowers are selling so well. The vegetables are. But anyway, they sell plum trees. Well, you know what a plum is, don't you? Well, of course. Do you know what a dried plum is? Well, it's called a prune. Let me read this to you. This is, I think this is just straight and to the point. The question in the book that I'm looking at is called Eating on the Wild Side. I'm telling you, I dig stuff like this anyway. The question is, how do prunes work? And so the questions ask, why do prunes and prune juice help people stay regular? The main reason is that they are high in soluble and insoluble fiber. The soluble fiber softens the stool, and the insoluble fiber speeds it on its way. Okay. It goes on to say that prunes also contain a sugar called sorbitol, which promotes the growth of microorganisms in the colon, which in turn promotes regularity. Maybe the one detail that it did not mention that I think you could say is assumed or implied. When prunes promote the growth of bacteria in the colon, I think it's safe to assume that they're talking about the growth of beneficial microorganisms. You may have heard the term the microbiome. Well, you're only going to be as healthy as you have good concentrations of good bacteria versus ideally having very small concentrations of maybe what I would call bad bacteria. And it's a continual balance. Do you want to have more good than bad? Oh, yes. Do you want to have a greater number of diversity? Yes. I don't know if eating Doritos or Cheetos is actually going to promote good beneficial microorganisms growing in your bowel, but prunes will. Now, this right here, maybe you're a woman that has silver hair or white hair. You might want to listen to this right here. It says that prunes are proving to be higher in antioxidants than many other nutritious fruits, including most varieties of blueberries and strawberries. So when I read that, that caught my attention. Well, here's a new finding from a study that they can also strengthen your bones. Isn't this interesting? In a year-long British study, 160 postmenopausal women that had low bone density, which means they had a condition called osteopenia. They took part in this fruit-eating experiment. For a year, each volunteer consumed a daily serving of either dried apples or dried plums, which is called a prune. Excuse me. Measurements taken during and after the study show that the consumption of both dried fruits led to an increase in bone density. Okay, so I'm not trying to disrespect the dried apple, but let me read the rest of it to you. But they go on to say that the women eating the prunes, they showed the greatest improvement. The reason that prunes help build bone, the researchers believe, is that they reduce inflammation that contributes to bone loss. That's exactly what Dr. Fiveco told me before we could name inflammation. He was telling me all about it. Because when you have excessive levels of inflammation, your body breaks down at a faster rate. I don't care what disease process you're going to call me with this morning and tell me about it, but the inflammation is going to be at the core of it. If we don't manage inflammation, we're not getting out of this. It also says that prunes are a very good source of the mineral called boron. You may not have heard this, but boron has been shown to speed bone development. You know what that means? If you can grow some brand new bone at a faster rate than what it breaks down, then you're in business. Okay, there you go. There's a word for today. Prunes. Concord grape juice. So if you get grape juice, which one has the most nutrients? Which one has the most antioxidants and phenolic compounds and, you know, good ingredients? It's the ones that's dark. All right, you thought that I would never get to the phones, but I did. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. What do you think about that carnivore diet?
I've seen it work wonders at times. There's a very famous gentleman on the internet. He's a Canadian psychologist by the name of Dr. Jordan Peterson. And I think he's been very open and honest when he gives lectures that he's struggled horribly with depression. But in his case, when he did the carnivore diet, everything radically changed. There was a significant improvement. And, of course, I was talking, it's kind of funny you should bring this up. Maybe not funny, ha-ha, but I talked to a young man yesterday, and this is what he told me. He said, I looked at pictures of myself from 2 years ago versus what I look like now. And he was just describing what this transformation he's gone through. But he told me, he said, I really feel like that two things that I was dealing with was, number one, I felt like I had this chronic ongoing issue with mono that would never go away and clear up, which maybe my definition of that would be he had a ongoing Epstein-Barr viral, you know, infection or entity living in his body, which is not good. And the other thing was he felt like he had an autoimmune, which, you know, just a simple definition of having an autoimmune disease means your body's no longer in that happy place, but your active living immune system actually starts attacking something that's you. Whether that's a joint or an organ, well, not good. But he was telling me, he said the greatest impact was the carnivore diet. And I think for a short season, he saw the benefit of doing this to where he tried to give his immune system a complete rest or a break from processing, so he just ate meat for about a month. What do you have in mind?
Well, I'm psoriatic arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having a bad trigger thumb episode. And I'm a diabetic. So I thought carnivore might help me become not overweight, not a diabetic, and help with my psoriatic arthritis.
From what you've studied or you've learned so far?
Correct.
What do you think is the most appealing way to tackle this? I mean, what kind of idea do you have in your mind of what you'd like to eat and what you'd like to do to try to get have a breakthrough here?
Well, I was thinking that doing the carnivore for about 30 days to 60 days and then transition into, like, meat and vegetables only with the occasional fruit.
Oh, man, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
You've got my blessing. Can I give you one or two points here?
That would be great.
Okay. And I realize what I'm saying is not 100% relevant to you, but it's just a point, okay? The other day I was reading a study about women that had a very great difficulty sleeping at night. I'm sure this topic doesn't relate to you because you probably fall asleep and you just wake up totally refreshed. Is that right?
No, but okay.
Anyway, the study that I was reading, they were saying, okay, if we have women load up on a high carbohydrate meal, so let's just say, for example, I'm just making this up, so you go to Olive Garden. Wait a second, they're not open. So you can't go there. But if you went to Olive Garden and you load up with like 5 breadsticks and then you had a big bowl of pasta, yeah, there might be chicken in it and there might be some vegetables, but really the key is you've got so much a load of carbohydrates. And the way the body deals with that, it converts these carbohydrates into sugar. So you can imagine that if you load up with heavy, heavy pasta and breadsticks, you're going to have a whole lot of carbohydrates available from that meal. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Well, they showed the worst quality sleep that the women would complain or report of is when they had their last meal of the day as a very high carbohydrate meal. Now, I want to counter that with this brilliant topic that you just brought up here on the radio. They had women take, these are just ideas, so just kind of give me a little bit of liberty here. So,
okay.
If you took 2 eggs over easy, maybe lightly fried in butter or olive or coconut oil, I want you to pretend that they're exactly 65% pure fat, which is probably pretty doggone close to accurate. So you would say, 65% fat, does that mean if I have 2 eggs for supper with a half an avocado that I'm eating a high-fat supper? That's exactly what that means. Or maybe if you had a ribeye steak that was cooked perfectly and it was so tender that the fat was kind of evenly dispersed, if it's easy to cut, then it's probably going to be somewhere between 60 and 65% pure fat. And I know this topic freaks people out, but I don't want you to freak out. I'm trying to convince you that a certain amount of fat and protein, it has a tremendous balancing effect for your hormonal system. So, in a roundabout way, with autoimmunity and with diabetes, these have very strong hormonal components, and so you're just trying to make it easy. So by greatly restricting your carbohydrates at the end of the day, and it could be just real simple. You could tell me that you want to have a salmon fillet with a steamed broccoli with butter squeezed all over all of it with salt and pepper and lemon juice, something like that. Well, wouldn't that be much lower in carbohydrates? All you can do is just put it to the test and see if you can start sleeping better. Now, I think you're going to agree with me. If you start sleeping deeper and better at night, is there a possibility or a great chance that you're going to have greater healing by morning time? What do you think the answer is?
Yes.
Yes, as opposed to sleeping like... I had a man tell me the other night, he said, well, this is yesterday, but he told me, he said, my heart acted up so badly, I did not get any sleep all night long. And, you know, you just feel bad for him because, you know, that's just like a certain form of misery to be a little bit scared, a little bit terrified. You don't know what's going on with the heart. It's acting up. You don't know if you're going to make it through the night. That's just a bad deal. And so what you're alluding to is, instead of me eating car, because I can tell you right now, you can find anybody anywhere to tell you to load up with carbohydrates. They don't make a lick of difference. We'll just give you all the insulin, the drugs to counter it. That's a bunch of baloney. That's just a recipe for disaster. And, you know, that's just nuts. Maybe I'm being too strong opinionated. But if you ate a carnivore diet, what would happen if you just had, you know, spinach with butter on top of it or collard greens?
I know. That.
You could do that, couldn't you?
I could. And I'm trying to, but...
There's other dynamics, right?
Yeah, because steak is boring.
Well, and I don't know that I'm going to tell you that bacon is the way to go with this. It may not have the nutritional density that you want. Can I tell you just a quick story of about 6 weeks ago?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, I walked into Walmart. Everybody's going nuts. There's no toilet paper to be found. I just decided I wouldn't go to the bathroom for 6 weeks. I'm joking about that. But when I walked in there, the first set of the freezer aisles is going to be all the processed, you know, pizzas, TV dinners, macaroni and cheese. If you can believe that they sell macaroni and cheese, all you got to do is pop it in the oven or the microwave and heat up. They do. Well, guess what? It was all sold out. I even made a video of it and sent it to a few of my friends, and I thought, this is crazy. I've never seen this before. And then I got to the next freezer section, and I thought, oh, my goodness. All the food's gone. There's nothing left. Is there something I don't know here? Does that mean the coronavirus is going to keep us from being able to get food again? Or so anyway, I kept going over, and I finally found it. I searched so hard. I came to the aisle where they had the frozen bags of broccoli and cauliflower and spinach and frozen kale and cut okra. And guess what? Nobody was touching those. And then I went down just a little bit further, and they had a complete section that was filled with salmon and red snapper and, what was it, halibut and cod. And I thought to myself, do they even know that this is actually the best food here in the store? You know, the frozen broccoli with a cod fillet. And I thought to myself, look at what people are doing. They're getting all the... There was no chicken nuggets available. I know that's disappointing to people that you can't find heavy laden MSG and sugar and chemicals in your chicken. So, but it that just told me something real quick. People are going for fake food. They're not going for real food.
Well, no, you're right. Except for they would eat beans and rice, but that was the only real food I think people got.
You're right. And so how are you going to make this work? You're going to do exactly what they do in India. They take their rice, and when they cook it, and when it's done, they do not eat it then. They put it exactly promptly into the refrigerator, and they let it cool down. And when that cools down over 12 hours, there is a very precise chemical reaction that takes place where the sugar is welded together. So if you bring the rice out the next day and you heat it up, you'll only get half the carbohydrates. This is pure brilliance. So if you tell me you like potatoes, I'm going to tell you to experiment with potatoes. But if you would heat them up, like if you had some new potatoes in a pan of water and they were ready to go, don't eat them then. Put them straight in the refrigerator. Take them out the next day. Make them twice baked potatoes or whatever they call that dish. But if you do those things, you will only get half the amount of carbohydrates. And so you get all the delicious excitement of the potatoes and the rice, but you don't get the heavy caloric carbohydrate load that everybody's addicted to.
I can do that. Because I like fried rice. And fried rice, you eat it, you cook it one day, and then you make it the next day.
You know what? Here's what we're going to have. You've got to be able to prove to yourself that when you go to bed at night, you can measure your blood sugar. And so if your blood sugar is 140 milligrams per deciliter of glucose, when you wake up in the morning, if your blood sugar goes up overnight to, say, 180, I do not like that. So we've got to find a way to combine both eating and exercising. And so the last part of the equation is, it may be hard to exercise, but you've got to find something that you can do. That is the only way that you can truly reset your insulin receptors on the surface of the cells to accept insulin again.
Okay.
So you're going to become a world-class athlete, aren't you?
I'm going to have to, because I can go to bed with 140 blood sugar, and I wake up with 220.
Well, I'm your friend. I'm not trying to be negative, but that can't go on much longer until there's a catastrophic failure. Did I mention that I love you and care about you? So I'm not trying to pick on you, but we've got to change that, where your blood sugar starts dropping overnight.
Yes.
And so there's other dynamics. I'm sure that you've got other issues you're dealing with that have you stressed emotionally. And so we can deal with those too. But do you think you could go for a walk every day?
Yes.
We'll do that then.
Okay.
Perfect. I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
You can do it. If you do things reasonably, you will easily shed between 5 and 10 pounds a month, no problem.
Okay, I can do that. I will do that.
I've actually seen people shed a lot more. I had a woman the other day, she shed 23 pounds in 1 month, and I thought, excuse me? Who is this person? And she said, everything changed. I just got to a better place where I was much happier, and I found out that I had a friend that would walk with me. And I thought, oh, my goodness. See there? Iron sharpens iron. Way to go.
That is true.
Anyway, thank you very much, ma'am, for your
thank
phone
you.
Call. I really appreciate your great attitude.
Thank you, Dr. Morgan.
You're welcome. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Okay, if you want to join me on the radio, there's a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. If you call, I will answer, or I will try to push the button. All right, good morning. Welcome to the program. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you, Dr. Morgan.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
Yes, sir. I wanted to ask about eczema. When it's located on specific parts of the body, like my shins right now, is there a reason that it would be...
Yeah, it's the lower part of your colon that's being most inflamed and infected. Or affected is what I meant to say. I didn't mean to say infected.
Right.
I was trying to say it's the lower GI tract that most likely has got the brunt of the inflammation. That's why it's on your shins.
Okay. Okay. Very good. I knew there was a reason, because usually it would be just like on my hands or my fingers if I get into something that's not good. But it's
what do you think? What do you think is your number one trigger? That if you eat this or come in contact with that, what do you think sets you off?
Oh, sugar.
In what form, though?
Processed sugar, all the nice little sweet
cakes. Well, I mean, but I was going to say, do you think it could be like in the form of ice cream, though?
No, I stay away from ice cream. You told me one time to stay away from dairy and chocolate. So I try to do that, and I get a non-dairy creamer, but I think it's got a little sugar in it. But I don't know what's setting it off on my shins, because I recall ever having it on my shins.
Well, do you have an extraordinary amount of stress right now in your life?
Yes, I think most of us do.
Well, and believe me, I am not trying to pick on you. I think just about everybody is hugely stressed, but there is a very high correlation to being stressed and having eczema flare.
Okay.
But I would say a couple of things that you can do. You know, one thing that you could try simply, I mean, it's been proven over and over again medicinally or in research settings that when a human being is under stress, they just bleed magnesium. Actually, that probably isn't the right way to say that. What I should have said is magnesium just leaves their body through the urine at such a high exponential rate. And actually, I read a story about something this morning about a group of 200 people that had low energy. And the only thing in the study they did was they gave them magnesium, because you've got to have magnesium in order to generate ATP or energy production. So what I was getting to is, if you want to take like an Epsom salt bath, Epsom salt is also known as magnesium sulfate. And if you just kind of soak in the bathtub for a while, your skin will just drink it up.
Hmm. Okay.
Have you had any issues with your digestive tract at all as far as it kind of communicating symptoms or stress?
No, not really.
Would you say that you're well hydrated?
Probably not. Probably.
Well, sometimes I see hydration as a powerful factor when it comes to eczema on the knees. So if you can just work on hydrating yourself, I've got a brilliant plan for you. It involves Welch's Concord grape juice. I haven't discussed that topic in a long time. Maybe at least 20 minutes. No, I'm joking.
Right.
But if you took like a 1 liter jug of water, you could easily put a cup of Welch's Concord grape juice in it, and you could just make, you know, poor man's or Dr. Morgan's Gatorade. But if you would take and put a pinch of Celtic salt in it, and maybe the juice of a lemon, you're making a pretty potent substance to kind of help rehydrate your body. It's going to provide you minerals, electrolytes. Doesn't have to be grape juice. It could be pomegranate juice or even cranberry juice, something like that.
Hmm.
But, you know, the skin, a lot of the old-time doctors, they used to call your skin your third kidney, which I know that sounds weird. Of course, this is going to be gross what I'm going to tell you, but if you've been to the store before, you've seen like a gentleman wearing a pure white T-shirt, except around the neck and around the armpits, it wasn't so pure white. It was pretty yellow. Which,
yeah.
I'm just suggesting there's not much difference between urine and sweat as far as its composition. Urine's a little bit more concentrated. So the other thing that I can see sometimes is the kidneys. When the feet are very tender and sore, I always think kidneys, kidneys, kidneys. And so I've had literally hundreds of people that I've taken care of that I would ask them on the follow-up visit, so this severe foot and leg pain that's killing you all night long, do you still have it? And they go, nope, it's better. And you look at their lab tests, and I'm going, oh, my word. Your kidneys are better. This is awesome. Way to go.
Wow.
But your kidneys are very intricate filters, and so they need to be hydrated.
Uh-huh. Okay. Just kind of help flush all that out.
Well, when it comes to waste, yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. You've got it. You hit the nail on the head.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what if all this wearing the gloves and things, I think it's starting to mess with my fingers, my fingertips.
Mm-hmm.
I wear a lot of gloves, and occasionally I rewear the gloves because of everything that's going on.
Is your name Cinderella? Because I think I've seen her wear white gloves. Is that correct?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Not quite.
I'm probably the one person that hadn't had a glove or a mask on this whole time. I'm definitely
have a pretty
different.
Good immune system. Pretty well, good immune system.
Well, I mean, you've got to use the wits that God's given you. If you walk through the gauntlet where everybody's sick, like if you were working in a nursing home facility, yes, uh-huh. I would probably do exactly what you're doing, gloves and mask.
Right. Okay. Anything to do specifically for my fingers because I believe it's eczema or something trying to...
Do you know what the woman said earlier that called? She said that she mentioned the term carnivore diet. And I am being very direct with you. Sometimes that's the fastest way to calm the immune system down. So if you were to type in carnivore diet, if it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work. But if it does work, and you say to me, oh, my word, look at my skin now, I would say fabulous. So you might look into that, but... It's really hard for me not to recommend more of a meat and vegetable-based diet for most people. I'm pretty flexible. If somebody eats... go ahead.
What do you think about canned tuna?
You've got basically two options if you're going to eat tuna. It's going to come in a can or maybe a Mylar bag, which is kind of like a flexible can, I guess, or it's going to come frozen. I mean, you don't live in Japan where you're going to go to a sushi bar and say, I would like that. But tuna does contain a little bit of mercury because it's a large fish. But I think if you have a little bit every so often and your diet has plenty of vitamin C in it, I think things will probably go pretty well for you.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you, Dr. Morgan.
You're welcome. I wish you the very best. Let's see some beautiful fingers and shin bones.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Okay. What is it that I found that you might find interesting? Okay, here we go. Actually, I think you want to hear this right here. Well, let's go to the phone lines first. That's more important. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Dr. Morgan. I'm my miracle worker.
Did you say you're a miracle worker?
No, I said you are my miracle.
Oh, okay. Well, that's putting a lot of pressure on me. Okay, what do I have to do now?
Well, you just talked with somebody. You mentioned something the other day that foot pain is tied with kidney function.
In my mind, it is. I've just seen it over and over.
Well, my problem is I have a knee problem, and I'm wearing a brace, and that probably has nothing to do with what I'm talking about.
But well, it changes the dynamics of what you can do with your knee, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, it does. It really does. I have a hard time keeping it up. But I've noticed lately that my foot pain, I love to walk barefoot in the house. Can't get out in the grass because I have too many cats. But it is so painful to walk.
Did you say cats or did you say saber-toothed tigers crouching in the grass waiting for you?
No, little bitty ones, little feline, my little feral group. So in any case, I've got this horrible foot pain that I can't walk barefooted anymore.
Okay.
And you mentioned that the kidney was tied in with foot and leg pain.
Mm-hmm.
Then you also mentioned prunes.
I did, yes.
Now, that would help that somewhat.
Yes, I can guarantee you will move a lot faster if you eat a lot of prunes. I'm sure that was a bad joke. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just, listen. That's prunes, the greatest gift God gave us when we get old.
I guess you've learned what a horrible person I can be on a Saturday morning, right?
Oh no!
Well, we've got to find a way to deal with the dynamics of, you know, you can't do what you want to do because of a knee injury. So we got to make the best of it. So can I give you two ideas that are very inexpensive?
Absolutely.
Okay, if you had a clean 5-gallon bucket, I think they cost $3 at Atwood's or $2.50 at Walmart if you want to go there, or Tractor Supply or Lowe's. But you get a bucket and you fill it with very, very warm water, and you try to put at least one heaping cup of Epsom salt. And then you insert your bare foot without a sock on, hopefully, while you're out there, you know, counting your cats, and just let it soak for about 10 to 15 minutes. And what that will do is it will start to remove and scrub the inflammation from your leg. You can even kind of pump your foot up and down like you're... I need you to pretend that you're on a Singer treadle sewing machine and you're trying to make the sewing machine go by pumping the pedals up and down, which to me would be great fun, but, you know, it's the way it is.
Yeah. Okay.
So you could do that. The other one is just a little bit harder to convince people to do, but I can tell you from lots of experience, there's nothing that's going to work like this is. If you took that same 5-gallon bucket and, you know, you pour the Epsom salt out of it, and you fill it with water, but you put a fair amount of ice in it and get the water really cold. If you can put the foot that's just killing you in that every day for 21 days for 10 minutes, God has designed within the tissues of your foot to release what are called cold shock proteins when it thinks it's about to freeze to death. So I've done this many times myself. I know what you're going through. I'm sympathetic to it. But... it's mind over matter. You are not going to die. Of course, I'm not going to come anywhere near you if you're holding a double-barrel shotgun as you're doing it, because you might take out your wrath on me. But if you can do this for 10 minutes, you're telling your body you have absolutely got to mend and heal the situation right here. So if you could do that, that would be a move in the right direction. The other easy things that I think you could do, The kidneys love green vegetables. So if you like to eat broccoli and asparagus and Brussels sprouts and kale and celery and, well, cauliflower is white, but there's like an occasional green leaf cauliflower. So make it easy on your kidneys. The hardest thing on the kidneys is going to be sugar. The bottom line is, if you want to have gout, then eat sugar. It'll do it every time. But we need to promote healing and repair of the body, where you can start doing more walking barefoot without around the house or in the house without it killing you.
All right. Now, do I do both? Both with the hot water and the ice water?
If you do it either any way that you want to, if you tell me that the ice is like a whole level of pain and brutality, I'll believe you. I'm not trying to sabotage you. Or am I trying to sabotage you? I'm really not. But you could do the warmth afterward if you wanted to. But if you do those things, there's going to be a healing response. It's going to be very good and very positive.
Oh, thank you.
You're going to be very pleased.
Well, yes.
I didn't say with me, but with yourself.
Oh, no, pleased with you. I've listened to you for so many years, called on rare occasions, but I listen to your good words and I take them to heart. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're so welcome. And you know, I'm sort of teasing a little bit about this because there's no way you're going to say, oh, I love you, Dr. Morgan. This feels so good. You're not going to say that while you're doing it. But if you can do it and enjoy it, you'll be steps ahead of if you didn't do it. It'll be a game changer. It will be a game changer.
Oh, thank you very much. You get up in your 80s and you slow down somewhat, but it's not.
Who are you referring to in their 80s? Because obviously I hear your voice and you're like 61 tops.
No, ma'am,
you're wrong. I am the master of determining from the voice how old a person is, and you're 61 in 3 months exactly, in 17 days. Am I right?
No, not hardly.
You mean I missed it?
But come from a line of people that lived long. Most of my relatives, other than cancer and my dad's heart attack, lived way up into their late 90s. My last uncle passed at 102.
Well, that's the direction you're headed right now, right?
Yes, absolutely. Praise the Lord. I'm headed that way.
Well, if you're headed that way, the only way out of this for you, and of course, I know that we're all going to die. I'm not trying to be morbid. But
yes,
if you can regain your strength, then you can make it, Lord willing. And you've got to be physically strong. And the way to be strong is you've got to be able to move.
Yes, I do. Dr. Morgan, thank you so much. I'll get off now, and you can just fill someone else with wonderful words of wisdom.
Well, you're so kind. Thank you. You have a great day. And I look forward to hearing the response, okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay, here we go. Now, this one, I want you to hear this one. This comes from the year 2009, so that's only 11 years ago. Okay, there's a type of cherry that's called the Montmorency cherry. And this is a particular study where they're looking at the Montmorency cherry to see if it can reduce pain and inflammation. So here it is right here. In 2009... a group of 57 male and female runners. So to be in the study, you had two choices. You could be a boy or a girl and be in the study. Okay, I just wasted your time on that. But the key is you had to be a runner. And so these runners, 57 of them, they took part in a study conducted by the Oregon Health and Science University School of Medicine. Actually, that sounds ultra scientific and prestigious, if you ask me, the Oregon Health and Science University School of Medicine. So I like the sound of this. They say that the participants were scheduled to compete in Oregon's Hood to Coast Relay Race. Oh my goodness, I didn't remember reading this part. It says it's a challenging 200-mile course that traverses two mountain ranges. Whoa! Yeah, I definitely forgot that part. Evidently, I didn't read this very well before I came on the air. It says the volunteers in the other group, they consumed an equal amount. Oh, it says the runners in one group drank two glasses of Montmorency cherry juice, one before the race and one during the race. It's a 200-mile race. Come on. It says the runners in one group, they had the cherry juice, one before the race and one during the race, and the volunteers in the other group consumed an equal amount of cherry-flavored drink. I don't know, is that called cherry Kool-Aid, maybe? When the race was over, the runners who drank the real cherry juice reported significantly less pain. You tell me, have you ever heard of cherries being a remedy for arthritis or for gout? Guarantee you, if you had gout, you would be easily motivated to buy some cherries or drink some cherry juice. Simple as that. You know, for all I know, all jokes aside, just maybe, there's something of great, great benefit that's found in cherries that's not found in cherry-flavored Kool-Aid. I know, that's rocket science there. That's like a brain surgeon would come up with that one. A similar study showed that tart cherries can speed muscle recovery after exercise. I thought I had another study right here. Okay, here's one. Well, no, I think I... Have I read that one? Well, it says right here, this might be a waste of time. Well, no, it's not. It's just saying when the cherries are fresh, that's when they have the greatest potency. But, you know, you already understand all that. If the cherries come from a can, and the can's 100 years old, it may not actually have the available nutritional factors. They may have deteriorated or decayed over time. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning. I know it's about time to go, Dr. Morgan. First of all, I love you and I want to congratulate the lady that complimented you that's in her 80s. You, Dr. Morgan, I've got to say this. I take notes. I don't call all the time anymore, but I take notes. And I know there's a lot of people that listen to you probably do the same thing. And man, we love Dr. Morgan. Period.
Thank
you. Have a blessed weekend, sir. God bless you.
You
bye-bye.
Too. Hang in there, buddy. Bye-bye. What a sweet, generous man with the kind words. To me, his voice did not sound that familiar. I know he said he'd called before, but I didn't recognize it. Sorry about that. But I'm sure he's a great man. Very complimentary. You know, that's one thing that you could try. If you do have serious, legitimate pain in your feet and your ankles, I'm not trying to diagnose a person with gout over the radio. No, I can't do that. But there's some aspect of the kidneys that are failing to do their job properly, and they're just not working right. You know, on a microscopic level, your kidneys contain literally millions upon millions of these small, very elegant, very precise and sophisticated filters called glomeruli. And so when a person goes for a lab test and it measures what's called GFR in all capital letters, that is an extremely precise measurement of how well your kidneys are doing. You need to pay attention to that. So when your doctor does a physical or they draw labs, you need to make sure that they test that one marker called GFR. That stands for glomerular filtration rate. And your fortunes are going to rise or fall based on what that number shows right there. When it goes low, let's put it this way, below the number 60, that would be some degree of kidney failure. That does not sound fun to say kidney and failure in the same sentence, but sometimes you have to. I would say when GFR is 95 or above, that would be excellent. If it's between 95 and 60, most likely something has damaged the kidneys. Now, I know this is not rocket science here, but if a person is dehydrated, things aren't going to go well for the kidneys. So you need to consider that all the coffee in the world, all the tea, when I say tea, I'm just thinking about sweet tea from a fast food place where you could buy a gallon of it for $1.99. Or wherever. That's not the... When you drink soft drinks, you drink anything other than water. Now, herbal tea, in my mind, counts as water. It's going to be hard on your kidneys. Lord willing, I will be back this time next week. Thank you for all your kind words, and I pray that God looks upon each of you with great favor and great mercy this weekend. God bless you.